for your own safety.
You're not going crazy, Arthur. You're going sane in a crazy world.
Good news, everyone. I'm sending you on an extremely controversial mission.
Controversial?
Oh my, no.
You don't have a reflection.
Are you a vampire?
Am I a vampire?
It certainly is not every day that a man attains the exalted position of temporary honorary colonel. I thank you.
Welcome to Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood, the mostly weekly podcast by the Court of Nerds that brings news, reviews, and topics from the world of geekdom. The views expressed in this podcast are solely that of Kevin and not that of the Court of Nerds at large, and is meant for entertainment purposes only. Now your host for this misadventure, Mr. Sledge.
It's episode 25 of Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood, your trusted source for useless news, pointless reviews, and specious topics. But before any windmills get tilt, I'm going to give a shout out to our sponsor, Tom and Chi.
Hello friends, I'm Kevin from the Court of Nerds, delivering this very important message. It has come to my attention that roughly one-third of all Americans suffer from some form of lactose intolerance. Look to your left, then look to your right, and now look in the mirror. If you're Benjamin Raven, that intolerant person is staring back at you. While the rest of us normal people are disgusted with people like Ben and his inability to process dairy, we should understand their crippling conditions should be something to be pitied. And only rarely mocked, for they will never be able to know the pleasure of consuming delicious grilled cheese donuts between hosting Comic-Con panels without the ever-looming threat of obscene flatulence. While the world around them is joyously filling their arteries with life-sustaining goodness, people like Ben must be satisfied with their protein shakes and perfectly sculpted beards. So next time you meet one of those unfortunate people, or if you are one, then gross, but know that you can still get a salad at Tom and Chi and eat with the rest of us normal people. Thank you.
And now the news.
In This Is Only Helping Your Brand news, the maker of Humvee is suing the publisher of Call of Duty series for using its military vehicles in games without permission. In its lawsuit, AM General LLC accused Activision Blizzard Inc. of reaping billions of dollars by using both Humvee and HMMWV trademarks in their games, related toys, and books. The high-mobility multi-purpose wheeled vehicle, aka HMMWV, or Humvee for short, is a four-wheel drive, light military truck that's been deployed in war zones in Iraq, Afghanistan, and suburban soccer fields. Whether it's used by soldiers protecting the freedoms of Americans back home, or by middle-aged men overcompensating for some penile deficiency, AM General wants to make money off what they consider a brand, and are upset that Activision is making, quote, billions of dollars, end quote, off of their real-life product. AM General thinks its trucks played a large part in that success. The company claims that Activision duped gamers into believing that, quote, AM General licenses the games or somehow involved in their creation, end quote. After more than a year of alleged failed communications with a video game publisher, it's now seeking compensation, punitive, and triple damages from Activision, which should amount to a lot of dough. Activision is refusing to comment on the pending legal matter. So, are the sales of HMMWVs so slow, AM General, that you need to pad your bottom line? As far as I can tell, you think Activision will just settle this lawsuit and flood your South Bend, Indiana HQ with sweet, sweet World of Warcraft money. And they just might, because they could do it and not notice. But they are also a multi-billion dollar company with Harvard lawyers who aren't reliant on inflated government contracts to stay in business. so maybe they might fight too, and see how long you can last. Good luck!
Where's the rest of your platoon?
Wasted, Sarge.
And we will be too, sir, if we don't get the hell out of here.
You hit Marine?
No, sir.
Then listen up. You had your chance to be afraid before you joined my beloved Corps. But to guide you back to the true path, I brought this motivational device. Our big green style cannot be defeated.
What about that scarab?
We've all run the simulations. They're tough, but they ain't invincible. Stay with the Master G. He'll know what to do.
Yes, sir, Sergeant.
Thanks for the tank. He never gets me anything.
Oh, I know what the ladies like.
And this might be the end game for Microsoft gaming news. Microsoft is renewing its focus on Xbox software and services, according to Xbox chief Phil Spencer. The company's original ambition for the Xbox One spanned not just gaming, but also a wide range of TV and media capabilities, coupled with a stream-like download-based distribution model. Sony, in contrast, focused squarely on gaming and had somewhat more powerful hardware to boot up until recently. The reaction from the gaming community to Microsoft's plans was hostile, and while the company backtracked both on the media focus and a move away from the physical media, the Xbox One has consistently trailed the PlayStation 4's sales. Microsoft's position was further weakened by a shortage of first-party exclusive titles. As Nintendo demonstrated over the years, a solid stable of first-party titles can go a long way toward overcoming hardware weaknesses. But rather than expanding its development efforts, Microsoft has done the reverse. Last year, it shuttered UK developer Lionhead and Danish developer Press Play. With the release of the Xbox One X this last week, the hardware question has been resolved squarely in Microsoft's favor. The console is significantly more powerful both than its predecessor and its major competitor, the PlayStation 4 Pro. With this problem out of the way, the time has come for software. Spencer said the company is going to increase its investment in developing first-party titles, both creating new studios and acquiring existing ones to write Xbox games. But that's not the only thing in the cards, with a richer set of services also planned. In particular, Spencer said the company is likely to offer some kind of game streaming service within the next 3 years. Microsoft has had this ambition before. The company considered buying cloud gaming service OnLive, though eventually Sony would do so, and in 2013, internally tested a cloud-streamed video version of Halo 4. Spencer said the cost and quality concerns had prevented Microsoft from offering such a service in the past, but the massive expansion in Azure, which is the new data centers being built by Microsoft all over the world, has shifted the balance to make the streaming service available. This is the future of gaming. We're still not there yet, but when you can utilize large bandwidth internet connections with super fast off-site processing, then you have a cheap way for consumers to play a multitude of games. The problem is infrastructure. We don't have it in the US, and based on the way things are going, we won't have it for some time to come.
Any idea what it means?
Dear humanity, we regret being alien bastards. We regret coming to Earth. And we most definitely regret the Corps just blew up our raggedy-ass fleet. Hoorah!
Regret is a name, Sergeant. The name of one of the Covenant's religious leaders, a prophet. He's on that carrier, and he's calling for help.
In the Ross and Rachel of toy manufacturers news, Hasbro is one of the largest toy companies in the world, after Lego, and according to the report on the Wall Street Journal, it reportedly made an offer to take over its chief rival, Mattel. If the deal went through, it would bring the two largest toy companies in the US and their vast catalog of brands together. The Wall Street Journal sources say the deal was made recently, didn't disclose the terms, and it might not go anywhere. But the deal could be an opportunity for Mattel, which has struggled financially in recent years. The company has reported a decline in sales after Toys R Us filed for bankruptcy in September. The bankruptcy also impacted Hasbro sales, but the Rhode Island-based company has fared much better this year, due in part to its toys based on Disney properties such as Star Wars and Frozen. This isn't the first time the offer has been made, and Rachel, I mean Mattel, is beginning to realize that she isn't getting any younger and that Ross, I mean Hasbro, has a stable life, and sometimes settling makes your friends, I mean shareholders, happy.
Take care, Arbiter. What you say is heresy.
Is it? Oracle, what is Halo's purpose?
Collectively, the seven...
Not another word!
Please.
Don't shake the light bulb. If you want to keep your brain inside your head, I tell those boys to chill. Go ahead. Do your thing.
In an attempt to mitigate a spiraling controversy that saw several death threats made in response to what turned out to be the most downvoted comment in the history of Reddit news, EA has announced that it is tweaking its new Star Wars video game to let you play as Darth Vader faster. This one will take a little explaining. Star Wars Battlefront 2 is only the latest and most extreme example of the growing discontent over an increasingly common video game monetization strategy known as loot boxes, or loot crates. While specific implementations vary, the basic idea is that you spend real money on in-game currency that can be used to buy a bundle of randomized items, or loot. In some games like Overwatch or Destiny, the items are largely cosmetic, while in others like Battlefront 2, they have a more direct impact on gameplay. The crucial thing to understand about loot boxes is that they give you items that you could otherwise get simply by playing the game. You're not playing for items directly, unlike the infamous Oblivion horse armor that kicked off microtransaction controversy in its own decades ago, nor is paying the only way to get them. What you're paying for, essentially, is to save time. Loot boxes are a way to build up your character's wardrobe, or your soccer team's roster, or your garage of cars, to an extent that would normally require having played the game for far longer. Although paying for loot boxes is optional, the problem is the effects that it may have on a game for those who don't want to pay. Publishers are incentivized to encourage players to spend, after all, which means they may consider it in their interest to balance the core game experience so that it's more of a repetitive slog for those who don't spend extra. If paid-for loot can give you an advantage in multiplayer, meanwhile, the integrity of the experience is compromised. Finally, if desirable content is perceived as being artificially restricted, players are likely to resent the prospect of being forced to pay for it. Battlefront 2 appears, or at least appeared, to be guilty of all three. Since the game went live for EA Access and Origin Access subscribers late last week, players have taken umbrage with the various currency systems and how those affect unlockable upgrades, known as Star Cards. Battlefront 2 also puts time limit on how often you are able to earn currency in some modes, earning unflattering comparisons with free-play mobile games. The biggest issue, however, has been now how Battlefront 2 gates access to the, quote, hero characters. Making sense now from that beginning? Alright. For those unfamiliar with the franchise, players spend most of their time in the Battlefront taking the role of a regular grunt on the ground, say a stormtrooper or a battle droid. Roger, roger. But over the course of a multiplayer match, players can earn points to call in powerful hero units, letting them play as characters like Luke Skywalker or Darth Vader. This time around, though, there's a big catch. While some of Battlefront 2's heroes are available immediately, if you want to play as Luke, Vader, Chewbacca, Emperor Palpatine, Leia, or campaign protagonist Aiden Varisio, I don't know how to pronounce his name, you have to unlock the first using credits, one of Battlefront 2's three in-game currencies. The problem is that until EA backtracked yesterday, the number of credits needed to unlock these characters was really, 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 really high. Luke and Vader needed 60,000 credits each to unlock in multiplayer. For example, with Palpatine, Leia, and Chewbacca running for 40,000 credits each, and Aiden costing a relatively cheap 20,000 credits. EA reduced these amounts by 75%, so Luke and Vader now cost 15,000 credits each. Quote, based on what we've seen in the trial, end quote, read EA's statement, quote, this amount will make earnings these heroes an achievement, but one that will be accessible for all players, end quote. Although online games are tweaked and adjusted all the time, this is a pretty sizable and unprecedented reversal considering Battlefront 2 is coming out in just a couple of days. The issue isn't as simple as accusing EA of expecting players to shell extra cash to unlock these heroes, since credits can't be directly bought using money, but players can buy crystals and use them to buy loot boxes which contain star cards, different swappable abilities and upgrades, and getting duplicate star cards rewards players with credits. And it's this system that led many players to believe that EA was attempting to fleece them. Other sources of credits are exhausted. Challenges in the campaign mode can apparently net you around 37,000 in total, and assuming you'd rather not spend money on loot crates, the last way you earn credits is by playing the game. According to the early reports from players, though, the amount of credits that Battlefield Battlefront 2 doles out doesn't seem to be particularly generous. Reddit user The Hotter Potato crunched the numbers to calculate that players are, at least for now, getting around 275 credits per each match of roughly around 11 minutes, which would have meant around 40 hours of constant gameplay, not counting challenges and other credit sources, to unlock the pricier heroes. With EA's adjustment, that should now be around 10 hours. However, all this shakes out once the game is actually available. Battlefront 2 loot box system is a perfect storm of controversy. Rightly or wrongly, this perception is as follows. The game requires dozens of hours of tedious drudgery to access the iconic Star Wars characters with their powerful abilities, while EA is encouraging players to pay money to essentially skip that process. Is the company just being nakedly hostile and money-grabbing? Battlefront 2 will have been an absurdly expensive game to produce. Its predecessor, 2015's Battlefront, was slammed for its lack of content and its $50 season pass that was essentially obligatory for anyone who wanted to continue playing the game. This time around, EA is going all out with its full cinematic campaign mode developed by a new internal studio Motive, while Burnout and Need for Speed team Criterion handles the space combat and Battlefield developer DICE creates the multiplayer. It's essentially three games in one from a development standpoint, all three of which are on absolute technical cutting edge. Also, you know, it's Star Wars. Meanwhile, games in the US still cost the same, $60, that they have for decades. It's unlikely that people would react well to a price rise across the board, and after the first Battlefront DLC strategy proved unpopular, EA's decision to skip the season pass for the sequel was met with warm approval. Did people expect that there wouldn't be anything to make up for the financial hit? Well, yes, most people did. To be clear, EA has undoubtedly mishandled the way they designed some of these systems, or at the very least, the way which it is they communicated them. It wouldn't have been forced to make such a dramatic change to Battlefront 2's economy otherwise. And it's not like the company is approaching financial danger. Quote, "We generated record net sales and operating cash flow in fiscal 2017, driven by our ongoing transition to digital as well as our increasing success with line services." End quote, CFO Blake Jorgensen said in May after the company reported its fourth quarter earnings. But that doesn't mean the spiraling costs of game development, especially as we transition to hardware that demands the creation of assets fit for 4K TVs, are necessarily sustainable at the same $60 price point we're all used to. At the kind of budgets being thrown around now, it's not hard to imagine a few high-profile failures, on a degree, let's say, Mass Effect Andromeda, which still hurts me to this day because I paid $100 for the Ultimate Edition and I didn't get any DLC for story mode. It was just a bunch of multiplayer crap that I still haven't played. Putting EA in the same sort of trouble the likes of THQ and Midway faced last generation. Video game companies can do a whole lot more, or they can also collapse. EA must balance its responsibility to shareholders with its responsibility to customers. And by making this change to Battlefront 2 at such a short notice, it seems the company knows it overstepped the mark. Its competitors will do well to take note of this example, and they must implement better loot box systems or find ways to do so without undermining the experience.
When I was just a young man, barely older than 16, and I'd witnessed but a fraction of what I have now seen, I still remember my first time when a boy became a man. The sister of my best friend, she took me by the hand. She led me to the bathroom and I followed her in fear. She got on her knees and gazed at me and gave me my first beer.
This week I'm reviewing three beers from Thimble Island Brewing Company. Now, I've had a few of Thimble Island's regularly distributed beers, and most of them have left me whelmed. Their Ghost Island Double IPA is nothing special, and their American Ale is just so-so. Their lager is actually quite good. I just rarely drink lager. But when I saw some new offerings at the local beer store, or Packy, as they call them here, I decided to give them a try. All three of these beers are from their Island Hopper line, which boldly bears the hashtag, not your average IPA. They are beers honoring the island's just coast off the coast of Long Island Sound. Thimble Island Brewing makes some beautiful can art, and these are no exception, though a bit more dull than their usually elaborate labels. It's simply a cartographer's depictions of the islands in exquisite relief. The first beer is called Real. It has a beer advocate rating of 3.9, but that was only on 3 reviews, so take that for what you will. It's a crisp and clean American IPA with an IBU of 70. It's hoppy, but the bitter is largely masked by the sweet citrus notes. It has an SRM of 6, which is standard for American-style IPAs, but like all other Island Hopper beers, it has an ABV of 8%, putting it in double IPA territory. This beer is fine, but it's my least favorite of the three. The second beer in the series is Governor, named after one of the larger islands in the Sound. It has no reviews on Beer Advocate yet, so I guess I might have to be the first. This is an earthy American IPA, brewed strictly with noble hops of the Hallertau Middle, starting off the process, and some later additions of Tettenhager and Saaz hops. These last two add a floral smell on the top of a simple malt. It has an IBU of 75, and unlike Real, you definitely feel the hoppy bitterness more. Despite its more earthy flavor, it's also slightly lighter in color, giving it an SRM of 5. It also has an ABV of 8, and definitely tastes more like a double IPA. This is a beer I can drink by the fireside in the fall. The third and final beer I'm reviewing in the series is called Money. No Beer Advocate score yet on this either, so I'm going to be busy later. It's dry hopped with over 2 pounds of hops per barrel and loaded with tons of Amarillo and Mosaic hops. Bursting with flavor, this New England style IPA is brewed with a simple malt bill to bring out hints of juice, pineapple, citrus, and other tropical aromas I can't quite pinpoint. It has an IBU of 79, making it the hoppiest of the bunch, but it is easily drinkable. Its SRM is also 5, making it somewhat lighter than most American IPAs, but it seems to be what most New England-style IPAs sit at anymore. Its APV is 8%, which you might end up noticing after your third pint. I can drink this beer in the springtime, just after the snows are beginning to melt, but you still need to keep warm as you walk the docks or stroll the glen. Easily my favorite of these three beers.
One more you can't stop, you're just a fool for the hops, malts, water, and yeast. Unleash the beast. Unleash the beast. Come on, unleash the beast. And if you don't drink beer, then you're a pansy. Give yourself a hand shandy, or maybe dry ginger. Lime and brandy, you can have your wines, you can talk about the vines, you can swirl it round your glass, or you can stick it up your Jesus. Turn water into wine, biggest cock up of all time, should have turned it into beer, it'd have two Christians here. We turn Christian for
beer. Well, apparently I ranted about Battlefield 2 for a very long time, so the topic wheel will have to wait for next week. It's okay, nobody really wants to understand blockchain. I'm Kevin from the Court of Nerds saying that, for the love of Mother Terra, always keep your owlbears well fed. Bye!